The sexual harassment plaguing scientists and how that affects research. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Kimberly Adams in for Molly Wood. Science remains a male-dominated field, and in academia, some take advantage of that power. In a 2014 study, Catherine Clancy, an anthropologist at the University of Illinois, found at research field sites, harassment was pervasive. Additionally, she found few people knew of mechanisms to report incidents. Clancy has continued her work in this area, and last month, she presented her findings at a hearing before Congress. Catherine joins me now, and how common is harassment in science?
It's about as common in the sciences as it seems to be in most male-dominated workplaces, especially ones that are very hierarchical. I'm beginning to kind of lump the military, politics, and sciences in kind of a similar bin in my mind the more I study this. These are places that are male-dominated, have a high degree of hierarchy in the way that they work. So in the sciences, the way that looks is, you know, you when you're a grad student, you often have this one advisor, and whether or not this advisor likes you and thinks you're smart and thinks you're a good scientist basically sets up whether or not you are going to get a job.
You've said that there are three main things that happen to women who are sexually harassed. Can you go through those with me, please?
Sure. So when women experience sexual harassment, their careers stall out. They intentionally take lateral moves in their careers rather than advancing, or they leave altogether. You know, with that stalling out, a lot of times that's because they're meeting resistance where they are, or they have trouble sort of moving forward. So a lot of women report to us, frankly, post-traumatic stress symptoms. So difficulty when they open up their research, even doing their research, because it's so traumatizing to remember what that field site experience was like. And so it slows their progress.
So what are your recommendations to the congressional committee you addressed and to academia more broadly for how to address this issue?
So, you know, there are a lot of ways that people have already, since our first paper came out in 2014, started to make some really amazing changes in field sites. They're writing codes of conduct, sexual harassment policies. They're making sure to get everybody together at the beginning and say, this is what I consider professional conduct. If you don't act this way, that's a problem for me. But I have to say that I think the biggest issue is in universities themselves, because that's where the reporting mechanisms are, is through their Title IX offices. And right now, universities really think about Title IX in a letter of the law way where they're focusing on compliance. And they're focusing on, okay, we're told we have to have sexual harassment training. What's the lowest budget, crappiest training we can do so we can check that box? So universities have to decide to have a values into action approach to actually changing the way that they think about and address sexual harassment and just having more opportunities for people to figure out what it means to be professional and to be respectful and to identify together what that positive climate should actually look like.
How did you get involved in this particular field of research?
I'd been doing a lot of women in science activism, but then what really tipped me over into studying sexual harassment specifically was a friend of mine who was assaulted at her field site. It wasn't even so much the assault that drove me to want to explore this more, but the fact that when she reported it, it was incredibly re-traumatizing. She tried to report to the field site director, who laughed in her face and called her a liar. She tried to tell her own advisor about the situation, and he said, you know, I'm so sorry this happened to you, but if you report this or go any further with this, we'll lose all that data. And that was the moment that did it for me, that moment of saying, you know, the data that we're collecting is somehow more important than this person's mental and physical health.
Catherine Clancy is a professor of anthropology who studies the prevalence of sexual harassment in science. She says while the cost to individual scientists is high, there's a broader cost. When researchers leave academia, Clancy says we lose access to their knowledge and the discoveries they might have made. I'm Kimberly Adams, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.